It's Wednesday, July 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Turkey joins the direct fight against Islamic State.
The world must recognize Africa's extraordinary progress.
President Obama wraps up his trip to Africa. Also ahead, oil prices continue downward. Eminem throws his musical punches at a new film. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. The United States Monday said it is working with Turkey on an attack plan to clear Islamic State insurgents from northern Syria. A U.S. official told news agencies the goal is to create an Islamic State free zone to ensure greater security along Turkey's border with Syria. But the official said the joint U.S.-Turkey military operation would not include the imposition of a no-fly zone in the region, a long-standing Turkish demand. U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby says what is under consideration is deepening cooperation with Turkey to counter the IS threat in northwest Syria.
I don't have any announcements today about what that's going to entail, but we are certainly cognizant of the fact that 2 million some odd refugees are in Turkey, and the Turks are carrying a heavy load in trying to deal with that. One of the reasons why we continue to have discussions with the Turks is to explore ways that we can work together with them through the coalition to go after ISIL. This is a country that has a border they're concerned about. They've got 2 million refugees. They've agreed to host a train and equip site inside Turkey, and now they've allowed us to have access to some of their bases to conduct airstrikes and missions against ISIL inside Syria. And they have agreed to do more. And we're just going to have to see where this goes in the future. As I said at the outset, we're going to continue to talk with them. We're going to continue to try to explore areas where that cooperation can improve.
And he repeated Monday, Turkey has a right to defend itself. Turkey last week launched airstrikes aimed against Kurdish and IS targets in Syria and Iraq after deadly terrorist attacks claimed by both groups in Turkey. Kirby says the U.S. has been assured that Turkey's airstrikes in Syria are aimed at the IS group. Regional analyst Jonathan Adelman of the University of Denver isn't so sure and says the failure of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to win an outright parliamentary majority in June elections may be a part of Turkey's decision to go after both terrorist groups.
It was the Kurdish party that got 13% of the vote that prevented him from becoming almost an absolute dictator. And so he's now turned and hopes in another election that he will beat the Kurds and keep their vote down. And as a result, he then will be able to achieve what he wants to because there's a lot of anti-Kurdish sentiment. But on the other hand, it also puts the United States in a very bad position. The problem is that the Kurds are on our side.
Is this going to destroy Kurdish efforts to fight IS?
Probably, because they are under air attack now by the Turks. And they had expected that the interim agreement they had reached a couple years ago, and it seems like, and many people, I was reading an article by somebody at London School of Economics, said there was a deal. We're just almost ready to have a deal between the Kurds and the Turks to give them semi-autonomy. But now that's gone. And so that also puts the United States not only in a bad position with regards to what do we do if we lose the Kurds, and they fought very hard against Bashar Assad, but we also lose the other side of that as well. We lose the fact that we actually are supporting a country, Turkey, which has traditionally been a good ally until recently of ours, and now they're killing a lot of innocent civilians from a people that we like.
Now, we have two different Kurdish militia, the YPG, or People's Protection Units, which apparently has been fighting IS effectively, and the PKK, which has launched terrorist attacks inside Turkey, and Turkey says it's going after. Is there any discrimination between the two, or is Turkey going after all suspected Kurds?
The kind of initial indications, they could be wrong, that they're not differentiating among the Kurds, because this is a Turkish internal politics, which says that the Kurds are people that need to be repressed, and it's quite popular among large segments of Turkish society. And so we might see some difference, but if you see the vote for the president, and the vote that came out a couple months ago, what was powerful about it was that Erdogan did very badly in Kurdish areas with no differentiation between the two parties.
Jonathan Adelman, who was speaking with Victor Beatty. Northwestern University Middle East professor Nabil Khoury says Turkey's decision to launch airstrikes in Syria and Iraq may also be the result of Kurdish successes against IS.
What has been happening recently in the last, say, at least 6 months, if not more, is that Syrian Kurds, along with the Syria Free Army, have been successful in pushing ISIL out of several areas in northern Syria. I think selfishly, the Turks are worried that continued success by the Kurds may lead to an independent or at least autonomous Kurdish region along their borders, one that would involve Syrian Kurds, the PKK, and possibly Iraqi Kurds as well. That is not something that the Turks would like to see happen. So I think part of the motivation is, rather than have the Kurds do most of the work against ISIL and therefore benefit from it in terms of more territory that they control, the Turks want to do it themselves. And that way, it would be their forces that are clearing out areas, and it would be their forces which would be left in control, not Kurdish forces.
Doesn't that complicate matters for Washington in that the U.S. Is working hand-in-hand with the Kurds in northern Iraq?
Yes, it does. And to be working with two conflicted partners, the Turks and the Kurds, is complicated unless you can get them to work together. That part needs some fancy diplomacy, which we haven't seen.
Khoury says the Turks can be effective against IS fighters, but the United States must facilitate a diplomatic understanding between its Kurdish allies and Ankara on the future of liberated IS territory to avoid a future clash between two U.S. partners. Well, whether you call it IS, ISIL, ISIS, people are talking about it on social media. Let's see what they're saying about Turkey's fight against the Islamic State. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here in the studio with the latest from the State Department and more. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. John Kirby, the U.S. State Department spokesman, sent out multiple tweets today on Turkey, NATO, and the IS group. He wrote in the latest tweet that he was clear at briefing today. Turkey is critical ally in fight against ISIL. Our flight from Turkey bases enhances shared efforts. He's on Twitter at @statedeptspox.
Okay, I'm sure somebody else is tweeting about it. Who might that be?
Well, Senator John McCain, he sent out one tweet on the issue today. So McCain tweeted, "My statement on Turkey allowing use of air bases in campaign versus ISIL and creating safe zone to protect Syrian opposition." He then shared a link to his entire statement on his website at mccain.senate.gov. He wrote in the statement that he's concerned about reports of Turkish forces shelling Kurdish towns in Syria.
Interesting. What kind of hashtags are people using on Twitter for this?
Jim, there are two main hashtags related to the issue, and the first one is #NATOStopErdogan. That's, of course, referring to Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan. And that hashtag has been used more than 8,600 times in the last 24 hours. The second hashtag is a bit longer than that. It's #TurkeyAttackKurdsNotISIS. And that hashtag has been used nearly 1,000 times. But I couldn't find a hashtag in English that supports the Turkish government's actions on the Kurdish people. So at least on Twitter, the popular opinion is against the Turkish government on the issue. That's all for me today.
Well, hashtag thanks for the analysis, G. G. Abby Lee, and you can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
The news never stops.
So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. Trading in China was volatile Tuesday, but ended lower a day after the country's stocks suffered their steepest plunge in 8 years. The benchmark Shanghai Composite Index closed down about 1.7% after falling as much as 5% after the opening. On Monday, the index lost 8.5%. That was the biggest single-day plunge since 2007. The turmoil in China has also affected global investors. European markets on Monday dropped to two-week lows, and U.S. indices were down for a fifth straight session. The turmoil has also added pressure to oil prices. From the VOA New York Bureau, we welcome Alexis Christophorus. Alexis, what's happening with oil today?
Well, the Chinese stock market meltdown is just adding to oil's slippery slide. We had crude oil falling to a six-month low today of around $47.15 a barrel. Now, China's already volatile benchmark stock index has lost 10% in just the last two trading days. And most household debt is linked to real estate rather than the stock market. But with Chinese economic growth struggling to stick at 7%, analysts are saying demand for crude may not be enough to help mop up a global supply glut. Brent is now trading at around $52, and some analysts believe it will dip below 50. And also compounding the uncertainty over the health of the Chinese economy is, of course, concern about rising global oil production, especially in the U.S., where we really see no signs of it slowing down. Also today, British oil giant BP said second quarter profits tumbled 64% as crude prices slump. One analyst at Bank of America says oil prices are experiencing what he calls a double dip because of the supply glut that he believes will persist for at least another year and a half. Bank of America today cutting its third quarter estimate for Brent to $50 a barrel from $54. Jim?
Your stock is always high. Alexis Christophorus, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, in his farewell speech capping an historic trip to Kenya and Ethiopia, President Obama hailed Africa's extraordinary progress while noting that such progress can only be sustained through continued development and democracy for all. VOA White House correspondent Haru Pandey is traveling with the president and has more from African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa.
I stand before you as a proud American. I also stand before you as the son of an African.
With those words, Barack Obama, the first sitting U.S. president to address the African Union, encapsulated his personal interest in seeing Africa's continued economic and developmental growth as it sheds a history of colonialism.
A half century into this independence era, it is long past time to put aside old stereotypes of an Africa forever mired in poverty and conflict. The world must recognize Africa's extraordinary progress.
Mr. Obama hailed the continent's gains, from a plummeting HIV/AIDS infections rate to millions of Africans being lifted out of poverty, while championing the U.S. role in the progress. President Obama highlighted efforts to boost trade and U.S. initiatives focused on food security, increasing access to electricity, and supporting African entrepreneurship. While not naming China, Mr. Obama emphasized what sets the U.S. apart in its investment in Africa.
Economic relationships can't simply be about building countries' infrastructure with foreign labor or extracting Africa's natural resources. Real economic partnerships have to be a good deal for Africa. They have to create jobs and capacity for Africans.
But the American leader cautioned the continent's impressive progress, quote, rest on a fragile foundation, with hundreds of millions of Africans still living in extreme poverty without access to basic infrastructure. In a message he also honed during his visit to Kenya, President Obama noted that nothing will unlock Africa's economic potential more than ending, quote, the cancer of corruption.
And when someone has to pay a bribe just to start a business, or go to school, or get an official to do the job they're supposed to be doing anyway. That's not the African way. It undermines the dignity of the people you represent.
The U.S. president received a rousing response when he talked of how progress in Africa is dependent on democracy, which he noted is not just the holding of formal elections.
When journalists are put behind bars for doing their jobs, or activists are threatened as governments crack down on civil society, then you may have democracy in name, but not in substance.
Audience members laughed as Mr. Obama said he didn't understand African leaders who refused to step aside when their terms end, noting his own time in office was coming to a close. Aru Pandey, VOA News, Addis Ababa.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Rapper Eminem is teaming up with No Doubt's Gwen Stefani for a new song from the boxing film called Southpaw. International Edition's David Byrd talked with Border Crossing's host Larry London about Kings Never Die.
You might be a fan of his from The Slim Shady or other songs that he's put on the radio, but Eminem has got a new one out, and he teams up with Gwen Stefani from No Doubt for Kings Never Die. Larry, this is from the soundtrack for the new 50 Cent produced movie Southpaw, right?
That's right. It's one of those boxing films. I saw the movie, and it ain't no Rocky, that's for sure.
Well, it's Jake Gyllenhaal, first
Jake Gyllenhaal is in the film. And by the way, Eminem was up for the same role, but he turned it down. In fact, he was negotiating to play the lead role,
right,
as the boxer whose name is Billy Hope in the film, but
right,
he said no, eventually deciding against it. So, yes, Jake Gyllenhaal, Rachel McAdams, 50 Cent, who's in the film.
And this song is a, it's, you know, it's kind of one of those angry rap anthem, get your blood up. It'd be great to work out to. It'd be a great workout song.
Eminem's got three songs on the soundtrack. And by the way, as a side note, this film was scored by James Horner, who passed away in June.
Right, the guy who did Titanic.
That's right. This is his last film that he put music in, and the end, they say in memory of James Horner.
I can hear the drummer drumming. In the trumpet, someone's trying to summon someone. I know something's coming, but I'm running from it. To be standing at the summit and plummet, how come it wasn't what I thought it was? Was it too good to be true? Have nothing, get it all, but too much of it, then lose it again. Did I swallow hallucinogens? Cause if not, where the hell did it go? Cause here I sit in Lucifer's den by the touch of and just choosing to sin, even if it means I'm selling my soul just to be the undisputed again. Do
this particular song that Eminem and Gwen Stefani perform doesn't appear until you're two-thirds of the way through the film. It's right near the end with the big fight, which I'm not going to reveal too much about, but the big fight that comes at the end, and you hear this song playing. And when you hear it in the film, you don't really hear much Gwen Stefani, but when you hear the song itself, she's featured in the song. You can tell it's her.
Now, this is not a big departure for Eminem because he's, you know, kind of in your face. But Gwen Stefani is more kind of mellow type thing. So this is a little, is she branching out with this tune?
Well, I can't necessarily say that, but she has been working on a new solo album. She's slow on the project. She's been working with Pharrell. We don't have a date. We don't have a title. We know very little about it. I know that she's doing some shows with No Doubt. And she's also going to be coaching on The Voice, replacing Christina Aguilera here in the U.S.
Okay, well, that's VOA's Larry London. You can hit him up on Twitter. That's at VOA underscore music. You can also watch his show, which is Border Crossings. That's on our website, www.voanews.com. If you want to send us a tweet, we're at VOA underscore IE. And if you want to send one to me, I'm at David underscore D Bird.
That music means we're going to fly now.
Yeah,
go back to Rocky One for that reference. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. You can find us all on Facebook at VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. Send us an email, voaasia at voanews.com. We hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Africa's continuing development is a top priority for the United States. Africa is a place of incredible dynamism, some of the fastest-growing markets in the world, extraordinary people, extraordinary resilience, said President Barack Obama. It has the potential to be the next center of global economic growth. There is little doubt that increasing trade is one of the fastest ways to promote economic growth, boost development, and reduce poverty. That is why 15 years ago, the United States initiated and passed into law the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. It is a trade preference program that eliminates import tariffs on most goods from eligible countries into the United States, thus easing the way for African products to enter U.S. markets. However, nations interested in participating in AGOA must first meet certain criteria set by the United States, including supporting market-based economies and the rule of law and protecting human rights. Since its inception in the summer of 2000, AGOA has created economic opportunities by supporting regional integration, helping African companies become more competitive, and fostering an enabling environment for private sector investment. It has created some 350,000 direct jobs and hundreds of thousands of indirect jobs. Over the years, AGOA has become the cornerstone of the U.S.-African economic relationship and has expanded U.S. trade and investment with eligible sub-Saharan African countries. AGOA was due to expire in September 2015, but on July 25th, with strong backing from the administration, the U.S. Congress extended the program for another 10 years, and 4 days later, President Obama signed the extension into law. Now that it's been renewed, AGOA will be central to our efforts to boost the trade and investment that supports hundreds of thousands of jobs, both in Africa and the United States, creating opportunities for all of us, said President Obama. And I'm especially pleased that AGOA will continue to encourage good governance and labor and human rights. That's something that we can be proud of. This year's AGOA Forum will be held in Libreville, Gabon, on August 26th through 27th, with the theme AGOA at 15, charting a course towards a sustainable U.S.-Africa trade and investment partnership. It will be preceded by events organized by civil society, the private sector, and the African Women's Entrepreneurship Program. The U.S. government wants to create shared prosperity with sub-Saharan Africa. Our continued commitment to AGOA is a hallmark of this effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.